Let me say that I don't have any financial anything that I need to disclose, but there's no slide there because when I was preparing this 10 days ago, I went to the library and I broke my nose, you know, against a glass door. That thing happens, and so it really did delay me in terms of preparing this. But anyway, what I'd like to share with you is a part of a research project in which we've been trying to track e-health tools that exist via the web. And one of the motivations, So this is the learning goals that I would like to, of this research piece. And basically, we're trying to map the scope of e-health social media initiatives that exist. Something very hard. We started in a very naive way about 2 years ago. And, you know, it's very hard to keep up with a database because the changes are almost every 30 days. If you go and do the kind of research that we started to do at the beginning, there's a lot of changes. We wanted to identify some categories so that would allow us to evaluate the level of cultural competency as one proxy for the ability of these tools to deal with health disparities. And also, what I will do today is I will discuss some of these evaluation criteria to share with you because I think they're very helpful in terms of thinking about this. All right. So what is e-health? And in general, there's sort of like two versions of it. I mean, the very optimistic one, this one, we will all be saved by e-health. But, and then there's sort of like the more phobic one that says, you know, there's nothing that can be done with that. And I think that we need to look for a more nuanced view on it. I've been writing about this and basically suggesting that, and this is how I define it, it's a continuum of integration of information technology in healthcare with electronic health records on one end to very sophisticated ways in which patients can manage their health more autonomously at the other end. And there's an article in the New England Journal of Medicine for whoever is interested in this subject to really read, and it basically makes the case of why, basically in this case, they talk about why healthcare is going home. This is a nice segue to actually the need of having broadband because one of the issues, I mean, the population is growing older. We need to figure out how to reduce resources, et cetera, et cetera. There's all kinds of reasons. This article makes a very good argument for the need of thinking seriously about health information technology and social media, et cetera, et cetera, and as a way of dealing with this crisis in the healthcare system. So the main points in e-health social technologies adoption is expanding. There's a continuous growth. Emerging digital media could enhance access plus quality with promise to reduce health disparities. So the idea would be that, you know, one would say, well, this is something that is quote cheap. It's something that could be accessible to everybody. But in a way, one of the things that I've been finding, and I have a little presentation that is on the web about this, and this is what I call inequity 2.0, is that for the privileged, the e-health is right there. I mean, it's something that is being used, and in fact, the more privileged 10 in this case have been the ones who have benefited the most from e-health implementation. So this is the graph, right? And I'm just going to approach it here. So basically, and what I'm interested in this, you know, is e-health actually helping us narrow the gap that we know exists? And so, you know, you have the more privileged communities on the top line and then the more vulnerable ones there. And my hypothesis is that rather than narrowing the gap, what we've probably seen is, right, as an average, everybody's getting better, but the gap is actually increasing. Does it make sense? And so, in a way, policymakers can make the case in either direction. And what I'm trying to point out is, well, do e-health initiatives, which probably most of the audience are very interested and probably love, and et cetera, and that's why you're here, But do they really make a difference in terms of reducing disparities, or we're basically just reproducing it? So what we did is we did a mixing method. We started with what we call an ethnography. There's actually a few books and articles written about this, basically ethnography online. We did a lot of qualitative analysis. We used some software to do this analysis. We did expert consultation, peer review of what we're doing as we were moving along in terms of selecting some of these eHealth tools. We actually used Twitter as a way of gathering experts from all over the world to look at our documents that were actually made available as we were building them with Google Docs and Dropbox, etc. We ended with a case analysis. We'll show you a little bit about that. And we did a literature review on the subject. We basically look at some sites, and we tried to track via the National Library of Medicine, PubMed, etc., if there's any articles published about these particular tools. So how did we choose the tools? We had we arrived to two cores. One is what we would call the eHealth core, and that was essential. And it's maybe the healthcare core. Basically, do these sites focus on healthcare? You know, so we will not look at anything that having anything to do with healthcare. Are they directed to patients and or healthcare providers? So, you know, basically anybody. But basically the idea was either to one or the other or both. And that there was expert consensus, that is, that the people who were sharing this database did agree that actually these were e-healthcare tools. And then in terms of, then we have what we call the technical core, and basically in terms of functionality, I'll tell you a little bit about that. Example, that there's no broken links, not a marketing gateway. There's a lot of e-health tools that are a way of getting into sort of like a place where you can have to purchase something, or they're trying to sell you something. That they have their own domain, so they wouldn't be just a graduate school project or something that exists within another, you know, website. That there's a certain level of frequency of use, and we use Alexa, which is a fairly simple tool to check the traffic of any site in the net. And that they were platform neutral. That is, they would not just function in an iPhone or a BlackBerry or just in Windows or just in a Mac, but that they would at least function in three platforms. And this was, you know, done in a without quote using a lot of, I would say, IT technical expertise. And here is the technical core criteria. We interoperability, that is, that the tool, and this is, I think, helpful for anyone consulting on doing an evaluation at different levels. Let's say you work at the Department of Public Health and you're thinking about eHealth tool, but I think that these are some of the things that you want to think about. It's interoperable, that is, it works in different, you don't have to have one kind of something to make it work. That is viable, that is scalable. That is, it's not just a novelty, something that looks very nice in the presentation of some IT person, and there are many of those actually, but that really seems something that, you know, it could be possible to implement with not a lot of resources. That is usable, simple, that the focus is on the end user, not on the technician, the IT person, or even the healthcare professional, but really it's always been thought as the end user central. I say this because one of the, as you know, and I'm a psychologist, but also I'm a public health person, one of the big problems with a lot of tools is that they're designed for the more privileged, and then they're quite adapted to those. When you get the big $1 million, you're adapted to make it culturally competent. And I think that in IT, there's sort of like the same thing, but in another way. Basically, you create something that you want to sell, and you make it out of your own, as your own thing, and rather than thinking first on what is that the user needs, right? Number of hits, as I said before, that is reliable, and when I say reliability, there are some tools like the HONE, H-O-N-E, I think is the one that measures the reliability of a website in the healthcare environment, something that already exists, and how it deals with privacy. So how if there's a disclosure around what it's going to do with your data, etc. In terms of the core criteria, here are some of the questions that this is after, you know, this was an iterative process. We didn't start with these questions. We came up with these questions as part of the result of the research. So these are the kinds of things that are, we think are core criteria to evaluate any health tool based in terms of cultural competency, in terms of health disparity, etc., or its ability to actually help us to collaborate. Who is the author? Who owns it? Who manages it? It's very different. Something is being managed by the Department of Public Health in a particular place, or Pfizer, for instance, or if it's being managed by Pfizer, is it managed by a particular unit in Pfizer, interesting one aspect or the other, right? What is the primary direction of communication? Is it only from the owner, producer to the end user, or is it set up so that actually everybody can engage? Is it more of a sort of Web 2 or Web 1 kind of tool? What is the collaborative potential? And I'll share with you some of the continuum we created. What is the purpose of the site? What are the sources of information that are being used? What is the potential for addressing health disparities, and does it encourage quantified salt tracking? Everybody's familiar with the idea of quantified salt tracking, right? Yes? Something that allows you to, for instance, monitor your weight, or you write down what happens with it, or an emotion, et cetera, et cetera. How many do we have time?
Yeah, 4.
Good. All right. So this is the continuum we came up with in terms of the collaborative potential. And so basically, at the very low end, there's no interaction between the creators and the users. You know, the creator creates something and then expects, quote, some consumption on the part of the user. And then there's the very high where, you know, you allow multiple stakeholders, patients, researchers, healthcare providers to interact with each other using a variety of tools. For instance, an example of this is patients like me. We tend to be very interactive, and it depends on actually, you know, you're really getting involved with the tool. I mean, the existence of the tool is based on developing a network around it. Now, it needs to be clear that a lot of tools have been created to create a market. I mean, it's like, you know, there's a lot of entrepreneurs, and I don't have anything against entrepreneurs, but there's a lot of tools that are created just to attract a certain amount of people to your site, have a good database of users, and then basically do something else with the database or sell your company for $5 million. You know, interesting, but not necessarily something that we would be very interested in. And so here, this is the typical table of cultural competency, and this is the one that one of the NIH typical continuum that is used by evaluators to think about cultural competency. And we started thinking about this, and we said, okay, let's look at, we had several people, judges, we had a lot of graduate students and some of the experts, and look at this website and tell me if they're competent. And it was very hard to come up with some operational criteria for these things in terms of the website. So, for instance, one would be language. When we began this, the translate from Google didn't work for sites. Now it does work. So there's a way of some sites you can translate, you can see in different languages. But at that time, it didn't happen. So, most of the sites were pretty much blind or unable to engage with a ELL, so to speak, audience, people who didn't necessarily understand English. And the other one would be to have photos that represent a more diverse contingency. We thought first, well, let's see if there's a diverse group of people here. And one of the things we found is that, yes, in some cases that's the case, but what we did find is that there were a lot of sites that had stock photos for diversity, you know? So basically, let's add to diversity and say we put a Chinese woman and a black guy and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But they really, there's no, that is just a PR sort of thing, right? And another way to think about it was that there was a real effort on the part of the site, and that was hard to measure, to involve or to oversample a vulnerable population. This is a second part, I mean, this is the taxonomy I promised at the beginning in terms of categories of EHL tools. So the first on the side, so imagine a huge Excel sheet or where each of these squares here, for instance, will represent a set of sites. And if you move down, what you will see is that it requires more engagement with your users. So at the top is basically knowledge information resources. There's very little where any individual can add or edit content or interact. And here's one example is the map of medicine, but there are many others. Then e-clinical networks are basically dedicated to healthcare providers who interact among them. Osmosis is one example. I need to wrap up, no problem. Etc. This is anyone interested, I can send you the link with this particular table and in the expanded table. All right, so this was the last slide. So I'm running, let me make one more comment here. One of the difficulties at doing this is that based just on analyzing the tool, this is sort of like a simplistic solution. I mean, a simplistic conclusion, I guess. It's sort of like a null hypothesis kind of conclusion. Just analyzing the site would not necessarily lead you to understand the ability of the tool, besides some very basic technical aspects, to assess if the tool really can address health equity issues. And in a way, what I'm asking is to figure out how we can, what we need to is to figure out how, you know, we can find this out. I'll make some comments around that when we do the question and answer, so I don't take some time from you.
Thank you very much. Give him a hand, please.